This is UN in Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Jocelyn Sambira. In this week's program, we'll hear from a former lost boy who's providing villagers in South Sudan with water. And the UN Special Envoy for the Democratic Republic of the Congo says only a political solution can stop the violence in the country. But first, the International Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination commemorates the victims of the Sharpeville Massacre on March 21, 1960, in which 69 peaceful demonstrators were killed by South African police under the former racist apartheid regime. 57 years later, it seems the world is becoming even more divided, and people are increasingly intolerant, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said in his address to member states on Tuesday.
People are being targeted because of their race, nationality, ethnicity, religion, or sexual orientation. And borders are being closed, and the international refugee protection regime is being undermined. In a time of upheaval and change, it's easy to paint vulnerable communities as the cause of problems. Migrants have become convenient scapegoats, and xenophobia widespread. Women and girls of minority communities are often targeted, and many minorities are experiencing racial profiling by authorities. Far too often, hate speech, stereotyping, and stigmatization are becoming normalized, and fringe figures have moved to center stage in many political systems.
States are required under international law to take effective actions to prevent and eliminate all forms of discrimination in all fields, he reminded the delegates. The debate at the UN General Assembly is timely because of the impact of the migration crisis. Susan Shabangu, the Minister of Women in the Presidency in South Africa, noted.
Regrettably, we are witnessing at the global level growing anti-migrant sentiments being displayed, infringing on the human dignity of migrants. State-sponsored xenophobia should not be tolerated. This is unacceptable and must be addressed by the international community. South Africa is no exception to the experiencing the challenges that come along with building an inclusive, equal, tolerant society for all who live in it.
Racial profiling leads to discriminatory policies, practices, and behaviors, resulting in the violation of migrants' rights, Ms. Shabangu warned. Anti-immigrant riots have been held in towns like Durban and Pretoria by South African nationals who blame foreigners for taking their jobs and driving up crime. In order to counter these misperceptions, the positive role that migrants play in the economy and in society needs to be highlighted. The recently appointed UN Special Representative for International Migration, Louise Arbour, said.
We hear strident voices of apprehension towards migrants arriving at their borders today. The reality is that no country can claim to be free from racism, racial discrimination, xenophobia, or intolerance. When the discourse on migration policy reverts to feverish debates which demonize migrants as burdens to society or perpetuate inaccuracies, the factual and overwhelming positive contribution of migrants that they make to our societies and economies are overshadowed and risk being forgotten altogether.
Ms. Arbour said that the UN Global Compact for a Safe, Orderly, and Regular Migration, adopted last September, can help societies embrace diversity and change how the world perceives and treats migrants. The only way of stemming the violence in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, DRC, is through political negotiation with government and opposition groups, the UN Special Representative of the Secretary General said after briefing the Security Council on Tuesday. Maman Sidiku, who's also the head of the UN mission in the country, MONUSCO, urged both parties to implement the Accord de la Saint-Sylvestre. The agreement signed at the end of December last year calls for President Joseph Kabila to stand down following elections, which are expected to be held before the end of 2017. The Congolese people want elections to be held soon, Mr. Sidiku told Jerome Longue.
The only way out for Congo is a political solution. Congolese met, agreed on 31 December 2016 on what we call Accord de la Saint-Sylvestre. This accord has to be implemented, essentially meaning that a prime minister is to be appointed from the opposition, that they agree on who is going to be minister, etc., government, national unity, and that we move ahead towards elections by end of year. Election in which President Kabila cannot stand because he has run his two terms. 2-3 days ago, rather on the 16th March, the dialogue that seemed to be in a lull has restarted. At least the powers that be are agreeing with that. Secondly, the parliament met, the Senate met, and they said elections must be held. And we have to move ahead with this accord. I have to be optimistic because that's the only way you can move ahead. As Congolese people want their elections, and the sooner the better. And I don't think a politician would play it safe by delaying it. I'm talking about all camps, not just only the presidential camp, but also the opposition, because they also have their divisions.
Regarding the DRC, there are also different challenges. I am talking about violation of human rights and violences we can now observe in different parts of the country. Are you concerned about that?
Very much so. 5 days ago, I was in Kasai, precisely where we had serious allegations, including mass graves, including mass killings. And I did write to the government, I sent them a note verbal, asking them to investigate and thoroughly and quickly. They have started the investigation. I'm sure you heard that 2 days ago they arrested 7 soldiers, including 2 majors. So there is a process ongoing. We're going to work on that, and we are there to support. But yes, between last year and this year, we've seen a sharp increase in human rights violations. Well, not only from the government side, but also from, let's say, this group, for example, in the Kasai, that is recruiting children, 12 to 17, and sending them, I would say, to death, because, you know, they are attacking symbols of a state, they are attacking churches, etc., etc. So we have to do something.
And another main concern is about the social and the humanitarian situation. So how MONUSCO can help?
Well, how UN, international community, could help. For example, we have lots of displaced population in Tanganyika, 100,000 plus, 200,000 plus in Kasai, just to name those two areas, because we also have, you know, the backlog of before in North and South Kivu. But at the same time, resources are thin.
Small grassroots organizations can make a great difference in the communities where they work, according to the founder of a not-for-profit that is providing villagers in South Sudan with access to water. Salva Dut is a senior advisor with Water for South Sudan, which has drilled nearly 300 wells since 2005. The former lost boy who escaped conflict as a child in the then Sudan by trekking thousands of miles to Ethiopia and later Kenya is meeting with officials from the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, in connection with World Water Day, observed on March 22nd. Mr. Dut told Diane Penn why providing water access is crucial in the world's youngest country.
The people access to the water in South Sudan is very difficult. And now it's more difficult even because of the war that we have there. It makes it more challenging because we have a lot of people that have been displaced within the country, leaving their homes and going to the camp that they have no access to clean water, sanitation and hygiene and all those kind of things. And it's very difficult. And sometimes we get a dry season that we don't have enough water, and we have to drill the wells, but 300 feet deep to get the water out there for the people to drink it.
And what drew you to the issue of water?
When I came here to U.S. some years back, I didn't know where my parents were, but finally I heard about my father, was sick. And I went back to see him, and when I saw him, that I found out that he was drinking bad water. And I said, I have to do something to help my father. And I decided just to drill one well. From that one well, when I drill it, I see a lot of changes happening around the well. The school got built around the well. Clinic is coming in. Market is coming in. And these kids, girls that who cannot go to school, now have opportunity to go to school. And women that walk miles and miles, hours and hours daily, they have extra time to cook healthy food and do other things. And that kept me really going all the time because I knew I'm making changes to the people that who cannot make changes to themselves.
Now, I understand Water for South Sudan has dug more than 200 wells since you've started.
Yes, it's almost to 300 wells now.
What do you hope to achieve with your meetings here with different officials at the United Nations?
I'm hoping to achieve 2 things. First one is to let the United Nations know that a small organization that involved with the grassroots do make a great difference. Second, I really want UN to support South Sudan to become a stable country.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of UN in Africa. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Jocelyn Sambira.